talking about Johnny. And we were also talking about how faculty members who had no administrative experience failed to imagine what administration really entails, what kind of qualities, what kind of problems come up that they never hear of.
Right. It happens here in this office. We deal with things that departments never have to get involved with.
Right. What about the quality of appointments, which is a vital thing for any institution?
Faculty appointments?
Faculty appointments. Do you have any picture of that?
When I first came here, I felt the appointments were very good. I don't think in the latter years that the quality of the faculty appointments, they do not compare to the late 60s.
Is that right? That's interesting. Is there any reason for that?
Now, there are some good ones, but I guess I look for a faculty appointment to be someone who cares not only about the research, and now I'm doing it from a different viewpoint. I'm doing it as a previous student at a university and how, but someone who cares about the institution, who cares about how things operate, who really cares about students, mm-hmm. and can fit all this into a good position. And I think that the last, especially during the 80s and latter 70s, a lot of the faculty really didn't care about students.
That doesn't come through on, unless you're looking for it, it doesn't come through on the paper that you get on the CVs. You have to get back to the institution where the man is, check him back there.
Right.
That takes time. And if the person doing the appointing doesn't have that sensitivity, that resonance along that particular line of human endeavor and human experience, it's a missing factor mm-hmm. in the appointment picture. And it's too bad.
It's too bad, but we have lost that that quality, because the young faculty are not, the ones that appoint in the last 10 years are not, they don't care that much.
They don't come, the graduate schools don't turn them out that.
No.
Or they don't get that kind of individual.
Mm-hmm. I'm comparing back to the days of, I'll pick physics, mm-hmm. Max Dresden, yes, David
right,
Fox.
Right.
If three or four were there. Now, Max cared about his graduate students, and he spent time with them. The complaint we have from graduate students today, and not necessarily physics, but other departments, is that their faculty members don't want to be bothered.
Do you know Andy Jackson in physics?
I know the name. I don't know him
Andy
personally.
Andy Jackson. He's a first-rate individual.
Mm-hmm.
Who really cares about his students and enjoys teaching. He's a Princeton PhD.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are exceptions. I mean, you
yeah.
get a few,
yeah.
but we have a good many that do not.
Mm-hmm.
And that also don't care about the undergraduates. The thing that over the years that has upset me here, that undergraduates aren't assigned an advisor when they're a freshman. And Aldona, I had talked to Aldona when she first took over as the vice provost for undergraduate studies, and I'd known her before, and so we were sitting around. And I said, Aldona, I said, the thing that has always bothered me is, because I know from my own undergraduates that work here in the office, is that they don't, until they get a major, and even then, they don't have an advisor. And I said, I remember the days, which weren't that many, a few years ago, at the University of Texas at Austin, and when I was a freshman, the first name I got in my packet before I ever registered was who my advisor was. And I kept that advisor until I chose a major. And then I was assigned a department major advisor. And I had to see that person a minimum of once a semester at the beginning, and a minimum of once during the middle of the semester. And I had to check in with them. I couldn't take courses without talking to them. And when I graduated, Dr. Pete Gardner was my advisor. He knew me personally. He had had me as an advisee for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And we have undergraduates here who have never seen an advisor, and they're seniors. And I think Stony Brook and other schools still have the advisor system. And I know she tried to start that back again. Mm-hmm. But you can't just have a name. It's got to be a faculty member. Faculty members have to be committed to it. And at Texas, what they did was just divide up, and every faculty member would have, for example, Pete had 10 or 15 new students every semester, every fall. So totally, he'd have maybe 60 students, but 15 or 20 of them would be seniors. So he kept them for 4 years, all the way through. He followed them. And you saw nothing going by Pete's office. Any problem, you went to your advisor. And that's one of the things that Stony Brook never instituted, and I think it's hurt us. And I think that's one of the reasons why you have a lot of students who say they wouldn't come to Stony Brook if you paid them to. The Long Island students. That's why we have trouble getting some of the better students from Long Island. They don't come here. And that bothers me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's a certain conception of a university. Well, there are several conceptions of a university. And I think as an institution of learning and an association of faculty and students, a common life of the mind, that's one conception. I think it's the conception that we ought to have. The other conception is that we are a research university. And probably the primary one in the state. And the faculty members' research is the most important thing. Other things are here, possibly as instrumentalities to the research process.
See, I've never go along with that idea, mainly because I came to the University of Texas at Austin, which is also a research institution. Right. I think it brings in more research money, a lot more than Stony Brook does. It's part of the state system. Texas A&M is ranking up there like about 14th in federal money. Also, partially in North Carolina, University of North Carolina has, they care very much about their undergraduates, faculty, yeah, are assigned, and they outrank us too. I think that's a fallacy among
particularly among scientists.
Right. They like to believe that, and yet if you go to some of the California schools that are very research oriented, or even Princeton, the student has an advisor at Princeton. The undergraduates really are important at Princeton. They're important at Stanford. They're important at UCLA.
Can anything be done about that, given the people in the administration here now?
I had great hopes with Aldona, but with her leaving, I don't know. And I don't know the new provost. I think that if the administration made a commitment and enforced the commitment, said, look, we are here. I mean, I've said this song at meetings, and people look at me like I'm crazy. We are here only because we have students. If we did not have students, this university would cease to exist.
Yeah, that's what
And until we wake up at Stony Brook that we are supposed to be serving students first, I think we're I mean, we may survive, but I don't know if we will or not at the way they want to survive. The great universities are the universities who can realize that they serve students and, in addition, have the research going on. If they could get the students interested in this campus and feel like that they are part of it, that they really belong, they could turn out some wonderful research. Because you'd have students knocking down your doors to say, let me work on that project. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they have that now. I don't know. It's very complicated now. It's been too many years. They could have corrected it back in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 70s, when we were still small.
Well, we'll see what the new provost has in mind. Personally, I thought very highly of Jerry Schubel.
Oh, well, I've known Jerry for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Jerry and I, we're old-timers, so that's...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
I guess... Well, anyway,
so,
I think
the individuals that are important for future development.
Yeah.
I'd add Alex Pond to that.
Right. In what respect? Or respects?
The problem that Alex had is that he was not given the chance. He would have been a good president. He was very organized.
Locally or with Albany or both?
Both. I think he would have been good. He was also a person who was personable, who was bright, who could absorb facts, who could deal with the political bureaucracy.
He was certainly popular here on the island.
Mm-hmm. He was very popular with industry. He was very, very well respected, much more than Johnny was. He just rubbed some faculty the wrong way.
Well, he also...
Rubbed a few politicians the wrong way, too, I think, up in Albany. Or mainly Central, I guess it was.
Central administration.
They were afraid of him.
Were they?
At the time, the person who was dean of the graduate school in Buffalo, they said, Alex will never get president. This is before the furor started. And I said, why? They said, Central won't have it. They're afraid of it. And also some upstate politicians at that time were afraid of Alex because he had so much support from industry and businesses, the southern tier here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were afraid that he would, northern politicians, it was in their best interest to not make Stony Brook that large.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that Alex had enough contacts that he could put the pressure on. And since a lot of central office all came, most of them, in fact, very few, they didn't, they came from out of state, came from the northern groups. But that Alex just didn't have a chance. I think he would have been good. But what he did was good. He was fair, at least in the dealings with that I saw. I think Herbert's shaped the graduate school, definitely. His insight, his scholarly attitude. I think Sidney Gelber did. A lot. Sidney was a calming force when he was in administration.
A common force?
Calming.
Calming, yes.
He was a person who he would be at a meeting, he'd always keep people from coming to blows. He was like a mediator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did a lot for stability at this place. trying to think who else would that.
It's strange how things work out. I've been on the job about 2 months, or no, not as long as that. One chap came in from the philosophy department and said, you know, this place is going to hell, and it will unless you fire this person and that person. One of the people he mentioned was Sidney, chairman of the philosophy department.
But I felt that, I think a lot of people, as Sidney matured, he was, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
I could always go to him, and I still can. I can say, what do you think of this? Mm-hmm. And I will get a very thought out answer.
Balanced?
Mm-hmm. Very balanced. Well, what else you need to know?
Well, what questions haven't I asked that I should have asked?
Why have been fooling up to stay here all the years? Unfortunately, because after you're here so many years and you get vested, you can't move. At my age, I'm stuck. I'm in my 50s, so I really can't. I'm here for the duration.
Well, you develop a certain amount of loyalty to an institution.
I have loyalty to Stony Brook. I see its faults, but I feel I've been loyal. I'm proud of what it has achieved in a short period of time.
Right. Yeah. I think the people in the health sciences who are leaders here are proud of what that has become. I interviewed Arthur Upton last week.
Oh.
At the New York University Medical Center. I interviewed Ed Pellegrino.
Okay. I remember Ed.
And
no, Art.
Al Knudsen. You wouldn't have.
Ed? No?
Did you know him?
Mm-hmm.
Kirshner, Len Kirshner.
Kirshner. Remember when the health sciences starred Howard Oaks? Now you've already been, yeah, he's new. Howard Oaks is still.
Yes, I've interviewed Howard Oaks.
When the Health Sciences Center, of course, first started, it was small.
Yes.
And they knew everybody. We knew everybody. And of course, now it's gotten large. It's
right.
Are you finding a lot of interesting information?
Yes. Right. It's too bad that some of the key people in the early days are gone. But I've interviewed Leonard Olson.
Okay, I remember the name.
Well, he was the first person to start the Long Island Center.
Mm-hmm. At Oyster Bay Plainfield.
Yeah. And I've interviewed John Lee.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
First president.
And Francis was there starting off early, and I think, I forget who, it was four or five faculty yesterday, I think, were still here that started off at Oyster Bay.
Well, I've interviewed most of them. And I've interviewed Sam Gould,
mm-hmm.
and Ernie Boyer,
okay.
Larry Murray, Charlie Foster, Norm Hurd,
okay.
Bureau of the Budget. But you see, Dewey, Rockefeller, and Harriman are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Moore is gone. I've interviewed Beth Moore. And Warren, the Vice President. Trustees for a while.
I know, so I don't know if you've interviewed this person, but they're here on campus. Remember Warren Randall?
Yes, I have interviewed
him. Oh, you
him.
Have?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
I'm trying to think of people on campus who were the old timers. Someone who I may have retired. Did Stu Cohen in chemistry retire?
Who?
Stuart Cohen.
I don't think I know him.
He was, he worked in chemistry for me. I think he's retired, but he was like in charge of all the physical in chemistry. And Stuart was back in the days before we had the union, when we were just starting the professional group on campus. He might have some inside of things that went on the campuses way back in the, you know, 66, 67.
C-O-H-E-N. Yeah.
Stuart Cohen. I was called Stu. Trying to think of people who were here back then.
I think I ought to interview Costum.
Yes. And of course, Burke is dead. Charlie from Research Foundation.
Burke?
Isn't he dead, Charlie Burke?
I don't know.
He was head of the research administration when it was here on campus, Research Foundation, when it was opened in the infirmary on the second floor. All of research, purchasing and everything, they had three people. But Anne McKean would be one. She's an old time. She was an old timer here.
Well, I mean, let me get some of these names.
Let me get you. Shall I write on back
sure,
of here?
Go ahead.
Okay. Now she's retired, but she was the bursar, and the bursar people may still know where she is. Someone else, and he's retired to North Carolina, but he was in student accounts, and he was back in the old days.
Who is this?
Lenny Thorpe. He was head of student accounts for years back in the ancient days. I think Charlie Burke, I think I'm pretty sure he's dead. That's Stuart. These are mainly professional people, mm-hmm. but they're people who were really involved with things going on campus, because back in those days we worked together, everybody knew everybody. He was chemistry. I don't know what Stu did, but someone in chemistry would know.
Put Costum down there.
Costum.
And Charlie, his predecessor.
Can't think of
in the business office.
Yeah, I can't think of who it was. I'll put and his predecessor, and maybe you can. Aceboro predecessor. I can't think of anymore. E-R-E-D-A-C-C-E-S-O-R? Predecessor?
E-R-E-D-E-C-E.
S-O-R. Okay. You'll know S-P. You'll know what I'm trying to name. Maurice Costin it was.
Yes.
Is he still alive?
I think so. I hadn't heard that he passed away. Charlie Cooper is the one.
Okay, Charlie Cooper.
I don't know where he is.
There was someone in student affairs. Max Swart.
Well,
mm-hmm. Remember back in the '70s, the guy in student affairs? Mm-hmm. He was short and slim with red hair. Max something. He went back out to Ohio, I think.
He was registrar, wasn't he?
He was registrar and in student affairs. Back in those days, we didn't have really student affairs. Remember, he went up to student affairs when they got a registrar, and he took over student affairs for a while?
I don't remember the last name. We can look it up in the catalog.
Let me see. Hold this a minute. What are you really interested in? Which years?
Well, the early years. Initially, we started off by saying 71. That's a really rough cutoff date because...
you don't want to go any further back than that?
No.
Oh.
Before 71.
Okay.
Simply because Bentley and I both left in 71. Johnny left in 78, and things have gone on up to the present, and I haven't cut people off sharply.
Okay, 62. Here was the first graduate bulletin.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It was a mimeograph. Hold on, that may be my daughter.
All right.
What's that? You're doing fine. Okay. Do you have temperature? Do you feel hot? No. Do you feel okay though? Did you eat your sandwich? Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Bye bye. My 7.5-year-old is at home. Sick.
Okay. Let's see. Frank Moore was chairman. That's board of trustees. Let's see. I assume Bill Sullivan you've interviewed, or is he still alive? William J. Sullivan.
He's dead.
He's dead now?
And all his papers. I checked his second wife, and she checked the secretary. Everything's gone.
Everything's gone.
Yeah.
See, there you were, Hartzell, yeah. Acting Dean of Arts and Sciences. We didn't even have a president in those days. What are you talking about? Tom Irvine. What about David Tilley?
I've got him.
You've got him?
I came in 62. I joined the central office in Albany as executive dean in the Albany office. Immediately on detail here as acting chief administrative officer and dean of arts and sciences. Mm-hmm. And in 6 months, I appointed Stan Ross.
Don Cook, did you?
Yes,
you
Cook and Welch.
You've got both of those, because they would know. People that Andre Edwards, assistant dean of students, you know, residence hall. That was in that days. As you see, the academic, we had no, the faculty were, let's see the faculty were, because I remember some of them back in that day. David, Irvin Gerst.
Yes, I
Ted, you've interviewed Ted Goforth.
I haven't interviewed Ted Goforth.
Ted's been here
right.
Since at least Ted Goforth would be a good
right.
one. Bob Sess?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Is he still here?
I don't know.
CESS.
Mm-hmm. He was in engineering. Dan Dicker is still here, and he's applied mathematics.
Right.
He was the one who was half-time assistant dean of graduate school back when I came here in 69.
Okay.
That's Daniel Dicker. And I think he's still in applied mathematics. And I assume you've already done Arnie Feingold, right?
Yes.
And Peter Kahn.
I haven't done him.
Peter was back here in 62.
Peter?
Mm-hmm. And he has a good memory. He might remember things.
I've done Alec and Dave Fox.
What about Bill Lenoble?
I've done Max. Well, I've done Max Dresden.
Mm-hmm. Bill Lenoble also was in chemistry in 62. See, Dresden wasn't here in 62.
No, that's right.
Bill Lenoble, he's in chemistry. William Lenoble, it is. Lee Noble, L-E, you know, Billy. He's in case in chemistry.
N-O-B.
L-E.
L-E.
Because a lot of them, like Fausto, and of course, Robert Schneider, you know, was here from day one.
Yes, I've interviewed Bob, and I've interviewed Fausto.
And Dick Solo? Dick Solo's been here since
I've
day
interviewed
one.
Dick Solo.
Okay. Is Sage still here?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, he was here back in those years. And just trying to think names of people that would you know. Because see, then our faculty list got very large the next year. Because then a lot of people that I knew. Yeah, Bob Dodd. Robert Dodd and Earth and Space.
Dodd and chap who was involved with the Voyager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Oh, Toby Ong. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed those two together.
Because a lot of them came in the next year. Well,
I'm trying to get in touch with one of the members of our local council, Bill Larson.
Okay.
He's up in Albany now. I've talked to him. I have a son up there. And twice I've visited my son, and Larson has been somewhere else in the country. So we'll get together sooner or later.
Well, that's... Yeah, Robert Joram. Okay, after David Fox. Now, let's see. Robert Joram was acting dean, graduate school, and professor of English.
Right.
And I think... Now, this was the... I was just double-checking. I think he stayed acting dean. Now, let's see. I'm just curious. You may ask me that question, and I thought it was...
Well, I think this interviewing could go on and on.
On forever.
And I'm trying to I think probably I ought to stop. The only tragedy, surely.
We had a professor in chemistry that killed himself.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Emerson. He drank cyanide. And I remember getting the phone call about 7:15 in the morning. I lived in Nassau County from the chemistry department. It was Francis. Francis said, get here immediately. Dr. Emerson has committed suicide, and we need you here to help with the police, you know, to help monitor things. And I remember coming over to tell Dr. Jordan to let him know what had happened, and we did the police investigation. And that, I guess, is the only real tragedy of that type. Besides students, I don't think we've had any other faculty.
One of the physics professors died. Mm-hmm. Another one in political science.
We've had several die, but I think this is the only suicide.